When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi there, and welcome to the Comedy Album Book Club, the podcast where we listen to a comedy album and then we talk about it. I'm your producer, Matt Ardill, a comedy nerd and improv student. And in addition to the album discussions, I, along with our host, actor and comedy enthusiast Jason DeLine, also interview members of the comedy community. Today's interview is part of the Juno series. The Juno Awards are Canada's answers to the Grammys, an annual recognition of musical artists that started in 1970. 2019 is the second year to present the award for Best Comedy Album after a 33-year hiatus for the category. Today, I talk to Juno-nominated comedian Mace Galone about their album, Awkwarder.
Okay, so I'm speaking with Mace Galone today, Juno nominee for his album Awkwarder. Welcome to the Comedy Album Book Club.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So to start, what was your first introduction to comedy?
Well, it's a little embarrassing for me because I used to be really, really, really into magic. And I wanted to be a magician more than anything in the world when I was like 12, 13, 14. And then at some point when I was 15, I started writing some jokes for my magic act. And then through that, I read Steve Martin's book. And in my head, I was only interested in the first part where he was still a magician. And like literally people told me like, oh, you should read this book. He was a magician at first. And I was like, I guess I'll read the first couple chapters. But like, as I read through the book, as he transitioned into like falling in love with comedy, I also sort of did. And then started just writing jokes just about unrelated to magic. They didn't, just kind of writing little bits in my notebook and eventually kind of realized that that was all I wanted to do and still didn't think I would ever perform it, but just realized that like I loved writing jokes. Yeah. So eventually did try it. And then, yeah.
I won't. Well, you're in good company, Steve Martin. Johnny Carson's another magician turned comedian. So it seems like a natural transition kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a lot easier. You don't have to bring a suitcase full of props with you and wear fake thumbs and have your pockets stuffed all the time. So,
yeah. And I've watched some of your material. You talk about going to magic camp. Did any of that inform your comedy and your stage presentation at all?
Not really, although it's definitely it was a very fun experience. Like I've gotten now a couple bits out of it. So every time I kind of think I'm done with that topic or premise, I remember another little thing about it. And then I work a new joke in with that. So I do in that way. It has.
Excellent. Yeah. I always wanted to do magic, to be honest. I never had the hand-eye coordination. I could never like that like close-up work. And I just didn't ever have the knack. So, I skipped that step.
I think that was probably for the best.
Now, how did you get your start in comedy? So what was like your first gig or what made you take that jump?
When I started writing jokes, I kind of like, at some point I told my family about it, and I started becoming very obsessed with stand-up comedians and like watching George mm-hmm. Carlin all the time and stuff, and saying like, oh, I would never do stand-up comedy. I just like watching it. Like, it's interesting to me. But then eventually I told my mom and dad a little bit about like, yeah, I tried writing some stuff, and they're like, oh, you should, they're so supportive, like the most encouraging, like, oh, you should try it. And at some mm-hmm. point my mom stumbled across an open mic in Hamilton, and I was 15. So she like called and asked if I could come do it. And yeah, they said yes. And we went down, and it was like in the attic sort of this like marketing company. It was a very weird setup. It was like this little cafe they were trying to start above this other company. And they had this open mic, and that's where I met my, one of my best friends in the world now, Patrick Coppolino. He was new to comedy at the time, and he had started this open mic, and yeah, that's where I did it.
Cool. Well, now, how's the Hamilton comedy scene compared to, because I mean, you live in Vancouver and you performed all over the place. So how's Hamilton's comedy world compared to the other places in Canada?
Yeah, it's really great. I think it's a small scene, and so I think it fluctuates a lot because it really relies on like ambitious and enthusiastic people all supporting each other, because it's not a big group of comics. But over the years, like I'm so glad that I had my start there. When I started, there was Patrick Coppolino and Manolo Santanos and Anthony Malekis and Clifford Myers, who were all kind of, they were the four that were going out every night. And then there were a couple others, and like two of my best friends in the world, Zach McDonald and Jordan Shearer, also were just starting out at the same time I was. And so they didn't have a whole lot to do at the time. There was kind of like one or two open mics, and then like the Yuck Yucks, which mm-hmm. was only doing two shows a week. And kind of as it built, we were all really good friends and supported anything each other did, and eventually had this nice little scene that other comics from out of town started coming into. And as I've seen throughout the years, that's kind of like a cycle that like has repeated itself, where like a new little crop of comics will show up and start shows, and then it'll be a good scene for a while, and then they'll move away or do other things, or just, move to Toronto or whatever. And then it might die down a little bit, but it seems to always come back. And I honestly think that the crowds in Hamilton are good because they're not very easy, and you kind of have to like really work to get them. But if you do, they'll give it up for you. They'll laugh, and you can really tell when something's funny, and so it really forces you to kind of work hard and like support the people around you.
Yeah, and that just makes it that much more rewarding, and having to work for that joke and work for those audiences. And when they keep coming back and keep supporting you, you know you've kind of earned those laughs.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. There's definitely also, like, Hamilton has been such a good music scene for a long time, mm-hmm. and so there's, like, a couple people in Hamilton that have kind of really worked to try to bring those two worlds together a little bit, and, like get the people that are excited about, like, local Hamilton homegrown bands to be excited about comedians too. So there's like I really love Hamilton. So
cool. Now you mentioned George Carlin a comedy hero, kind of thing. Somebody you watched a lot of and listened to a lot of. Are there any other comedians, contemporary comedians or comedians from the past that you're a big fan of, that you really enjoy?
Oh yeah. So a couple that I like really love, like I love George Carlin. Richard Jenny is one of my favorites of all time. Like mm-hmm. as a, oh, sorry, wait, I just realized you asked, you know what? This is embarrassing. What does the word contemporary mean, Matt?
like a peer, somebody who, like, not just like, also like, you know, classic comedians, but also maybe somebody who,
right,
you know,
right, someone so. Modern day that I work with. Okay.
Lenny, yeah, modern day or
I
or
love, yeah, okay, yeah, like sorry, I totally misunderstood the question. Comedians that are in our scene that I am a really big fan of are like, I love Ivan Decker. My girlfriend, Sophie Buttle, is a incredibly funny comedian and just like an insanely good joke writer and incredibly funny human being. So those would be two that I'd definitely check out. Also, Manolo Santanos and Packer Coppolino, like I mentioned, they're two of my best friends, but also like really hilarious in very unique ways. And they both have albums out, so you could check them out too.
And also, like, I may have been a little awkward in how I phrased it. I was also wondering what classic comedian, like, classic comedians you enjoy as well.
Oh,
so you were on the right.
Okay, cool.
You were sort of like throwing it open there. So you were on the right track when you started.
Okay,
just
sweet. Well, this is all an act. Trying to follow my brand of the awkward title. So this is not. Constructed. I am actually very socially adept? No. So classic comedians that I love. Well, I love Steve Martin, love George Carlin, love Richard Jenny. I really love the, like, I think it's been so cool that we've gotten to see this year, like, a new Chris Rock special and a new Ellen DeGeneres special, because like those are comics that I would have said are more classic, you know, like a year ago, but now they're right back to being, to putting stuff out. And I also love the Ray Romano special. Like, I think there were a bunch of classic comics that are, you know, still now doing great stuff.
Yeah, and I watched that Ellen special just recently, and it's like, it's amazing, you know, somebody who's sort of been out of the game of being on stage for a pretty long time, like, she just completely owned that. It was like, they're like, I'd watched her last HBO special about a year ago or so now, and then watching this, and it was like the same kind of perfect pacing and structure where she's able to, like, drops this little premise in the first sentence and then just brings it all home. And it's like, wow, it feels really awesome a lot.
Yeah. Well, as a comedy album fan, have you listened to her album? Oh my God, I'm forgetting the title. It's her in a bowl of SpaghettiOs on the cover.
One? No, I don't.
Oh man. I forget what it's called. It's incredible. Whatever it is, it's one of my favorite albums. I have it on my phone. I've re-listened to it like three times.
Taste
this. That one, I would recommend that album to anybody. Like, it's just such a great, like, relatable and it's just a great observational comedy album. Like, so many good jokes.
Well, we'll have to have you on the show sometime next time you're in Toronto to do a panel episode, and we can talk about Taste This. So I've always found Ellen super interesting. So I watched her stand up and her sitcom, and it's sort of great to see her come back and back in the 80s and 90s, sort of dating myself there, but it's great to see her come back and you know, just completely own the stage like that. So you mentioned Taste This. Is there any other favorite comedy albums or that you have?
My favorite comic of all time is Doug Stanhope, and so I would say that, like, my if I were to pick my top 10 albums, like, probably four of them would be his. And I would say his, like, the Beer Hall Putsch is an amazing one, and From Across the Street are my two favorite albums, probably. I love his writing. I love his ability to, like, either bring up a subject that kind of everybody's on the same page with and take you to a point where you're like, I don't know why I'm laughing at this. Like, I don't really agree with it, but I'm agreeing with it in the moment, you know, or start with something that you absolutely wouldn't agree with or an audience would never side with, and then against their will convince them of it.
Yeah. It takes a real, you know, real skill to bring an audience in on side with a, with a premise where it's really amazing to watch somebody like just pull that off.
Oh yeah. And I think he's the best at it. I feel like every single one of his bits surprises me, because we all, like, as a if you're a comedian or a fan of comedy, you will predict where you think a joke is going to go, and it doesn't mean it's bad if it goes where you think it's going to go. Like, sometimes that's perfect and it's satisfying and it's exactly what you want to hear, but I feel like with him it's never where I expect it is going to be, you know.
Yeah, that the Razznik's earlier, you know, fun of, okay, where is this going to go next?
Yeah.
Now, you recorded your own albums. What was the process of that like? So, how long did it take? How did you set up the process and what was involved?
Yeah. Okay. So, I recorded two albums, but there's overlap in the material. So, like, the first one I recorded too early, I think. Like, it was, I mean, you couldn't get earlier, really, because it was my first headline weekend ever. Other than small shows, you know, and like bar gigs and whatever, I never headlined really an actual club before this, which was, this was about, I guess, like 3 years ago now. And it was in Toronto. And it was a friend of mine who's like a really great friend and a very funny comedian, although I don't think he does it anymore, but he's like produced albums for people like Rob Pugh and stuff, and his name is Danny Menlow, and he wanted to come and record it, and I kind of was like a little hesitant, but I was like, yeah. He's like, we'll just record it, we'll decide what to do after. And then we recorded it, and in the excitement of it all, of like, you know, doing my first headline weekend and stuff, I got kind of caught up in it, and I was like, yeah, all right, let's put it out, why not? But immediately, when the 2 weeks later, when I got the like recording all put together, I was like listening to it and like hating it, just because of it's not refined at all. My material, not the recording or anything, just like had so many things all the way through that I was like, that's dumb. I wish I didn't do that. I wish I didn't say that. So at that point, it was a little far gone. We were already kind of too in on like putting it out. And so I put it out and kind of regretted it for a while. There was actually a funny thing where it like got miscategorized. I don't know the technical side of it, of how it's uploaded through CD Baby, but like it got miscategorized as folk music. So for a while I was going to like advertise it as like the number one comedy album on the folk music charts, because it's technically true. But then for about a year, I was like, just all I could think about is like, oh, I wish that wasn't out. If I could do it again, I would do it this way I'd change these things. And so eventually decided to just do it, to like use, you know, the new material that I like, swap out stuff that I didn't even want to have on there. And then the stuff that I wish I did right the first time, I just, there's a guy named Kevy in Vancouver who's produced a bunch of albums, and he's super funny and super nice. And he works for 604 Records. So he came out to a weekend that Sophie and I were doing at Heckler's in Victoria. And then just over two nights recorded it. It was just two shows. And and then just, you know, from there, it's like pretty simple, because I had spent so long thinking about all the changes that I wish I was able to make on that first album. When I kind of ended up putting it together, it was very similar to whatever I had just done on stage, because I had it so ingrained in my head, there wasn't too much editing and post to do. Like, I think maybe like one or two bits got rearranged, and maybe there was like a couple bits that we used from the second night that I didn't do the first night. But otherwise, it was like pretty simple after that.
Now, do you feel like that material is burned, or do you either turn to it and keep evolving that material?
There are some things that I wouldn't be against including in a bit in the future, because like they would add, like if there might be like a, like there's a couple bits that are like a minute long. One is about my nephew, and one is about this science protest. And I would say those are two bits that I've added so much else to now that I would put them on a future album. Everything else I wouldn't put on another album, but I will do it, you know, because it's not like a lot of people are listening to it at this moment, at least, and probably not ever. It'll probably take a while before I'm ever doing anything that enough people will listen to that it's like really genuinely burned, you know. But
yeah.
But I my comedy albums are my favorite thing, and they always have been in comedy. So my goal is to always just keep having new stuff. So I mean, I only do it as much as I need to, but definitely not against that. Like until I have good stuff, I'll keep doing that stuff.
Yeah, I loved the bit about, which I have a niece who's infinitely cooler than I was at her age as well. So I listened to that bit, and I'm like, it just resonated with me. But I'm working subtle magic on that, and then I took her to her first concert, and it was a Weird Al concert in Hamilton. So I'm like, I'm subtly trying to subvert her cool and bring her to the dark side.
Oh man, that is so funny. Thank you. I totally feel the same way, because my nephew has been getting into anime recently, and yeah, that's like the nerdiest thing. I mean, the thing is, when it started, I wasn't into anime at all. So when he told me he was getting into anime, I was kind of like, oh, like great, I'll encourage that. To encourage it, I've spent hours now watching it with him, and I gotta say, anime is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
So there was a brief short period where I was cooler than him, but it is switched.
It's that tug of war is going to go on for the rest of our lives. Great. So you write for This Hour is 22 Minutes. Which I love that show. I've been watching it since it first came on. How is the process of writing for This Hour different from stand-up? Is it more collaborative? Is it team-based? What's the differences there?
Yeah, it's definitely collaborative. I mean, stand-up can be too in a weird way, like in that you're always performing with people, and your friends will often be like, oh, have you thought about doing this or adding this callback or something like that, you know? But whereas at the office, it's more systematic collaboration of, okay, let's talk about some ideas. Let's split up and work on the idea. Then let's get back together and then punch it up and stuff like that. So it's definitely more collaborative. And I don't know, this is my first year doing it. So a lot of it has been new to me, and they've made a bunch of changes this year. So I don't know how it compares to other years, but how the week will work, if that's something you'd like to know, is like,
sure.
Okay. Over the weekend, we write some sketches on our own, and sometimes we only have to write one. Sometimes it's like two, and then you work with somebody else on something. And then on Monday, they go through and they look at all the sketches that were written over the weekend. They pick maybe about half of those, and then they do a read through with the cast where they out loud read the scripts in front of all the production people and all of us. And like, we all just get in a room, and it's kind of fun. It's like a show where, like, I love it because, like, I love stand up, but I love writing jokes the most, so it's like the best of both worlds. I get to enjoy watching people react to the joke, hopefully, there are plenty of times where they don't. And but I don't have to be the one delivering it, you know? And so they do the read, and then whatever works from that, they plan to film. And then the rest of the week, we kind of spend maybe writing a few more sketches, but mostly writing copy jokes and writing leads where we talk about the news at the beginning of the day. Every morning we talk about the news and figure out what topics are important. And then we just kind of write jokes about them.
Excellent. Now shifting gears a bit, that is a terrible transition. Sophie once drove a Prius around Stanley Park for 12 hours. How did you keep sane for that time and all that long in a car going in circles?
Oh, well, we didn't, which you can see on that video a little bit. You see you see the tip of the iceberg of how insane we were that day. What was crazy is that we had to start that at I think we started at 8 a.m. So we had to get there at 6 a.m. And the night before we had a show, so we were out till 1 in the morning.
Oh, no.
And then in the middle of the night, Sophie's apartment building, the alarm went off, the fire alarm in the whole building. So we had to wake up and get our clothes on and go out onto the street and wait out there for half an hour and then try to come back. So we got maybe 3 hours of sleep altogether. And then we had to drive for 10 hours straight. We were brain dead and delusional. And the other thing is that, for 10 hours, there's only so much of that time that you can be super cognizant of the fact that you're on camera. So we kept making stupid, just insane jokes that if they used any of that, they'd be like, oh, these two are literally insane and can't be trusted to do comedy professionally. There's one recurring joke. Well, one of the jokes was just, we thought it was so funny to keep joking about running people over, which progressively became funnier as the day went on and we were so tired. Yeah. But we were very insane and they only showed a little bit of it. So they actually did us a huge favor with that.
Awesome. Now, about the Juno. So last year, Ivan Decker won best comedy Juno. But that was the first album the first time that the award had been given out in 33 years. The prior two years back in the '80s were both Bob and Doug McKenzie, by Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas. And prior to that, it was Rich Little and the Royal Canadian Air Farce. Does it feel like Canada's maybe taking their comedy community a little bit more seriously and sort of maybe respecting it a bit more now that we're, as a nation giving out these awards, not just within our local communities?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And it feels like comedy just in general has become such a fixture of entertainment. It doesn't seem to be a subcategory anymore. It's so present, I think, in everybody's day to day because, you could argue that it's oversaturated, but at the same time, I think that it's a good thing that there's so much comedy out there because, maybe not all of it is great or maybe not all of it is as tight as it could be or some specials seem to be rushed out. But at the same time, it's gotten people, I think, used to the idea that stand-up is a thing there is so much of and you can watch, it's an infinite resource essentially. And so I definitely think that the awards are a really good step in the right direction of solidifying that, comedy can be like music. You can listen to it every day. And if you're into it and whoever you are, there's a comic out there for you, And I think that, I would say you're right that the the Junos are definitely like a big sign of that changing tide.
Yeah. Well, it's, and, you know, I found like with SiriusXM, constant support of comedians in Canada, it
yeah.
feels like there's a lot more awareness. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the top comic thing is really great. And, like, it's just so, excuse me, I burped. I hope that did not show up.
No, it did not care. It's all good.
I have suspected lactose intolerance, but Sophie is away right now, so I've eaten so much dairy today. And that I hope that that was not audible.
When my wife's away, it's McDonald's food for me. So
McDonald's is my favorite restaurant, for real. And she's away for 4 days, so that's probably about 6 McDonald's visits, I estimate. SiriusXM is awesome. They, like, the amount of Canadian albums that Ben Miner and Paul Padich play, just on Canada Laughs is like insane. They not only are supporting comics, just in spirit and with enthusiasm, they're literally putting thousands of dollars into comedians' pockets, like helping us do this as a living.
Awesome. Now, if you win, do you have any plans on how you're going to celebrate?
Definitely McDonald's. Definitely a lot of it. I really love that the Junos are in London, because I'll be like, my mom is going to come, and my sisters might come, but either way, I'll get to like go right home after the weekend. So, I'm just going to celebrate by hanging out with them and hanging out with my friends. And, I also do not think I'm going to win. That's not self-deprecating at all. It's just like, I'm genuinely shocked that I am even nominated. So there are so many strong comics in the country and in the lineup of the nominations, you know? So like, I am really just excited to be a part of it. And I feel like I've found out, it's already just constant celebrating, like pretty happy about it and happy to get to go and hang out with those people. Like, it's all just positive for me.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for chatting with me today, and, you know, best of luck on the Junos. And
thanks a lot, man.
Look forward to chatting with you again sometime soon.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be awesome. I really love the idea of this podcast, and I love the enthusiasm for comedy and comedy albums especially. So thanks a lot for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
My thanks to Mace Scaloni, and please make sure you subscribe to Comedy Album Book Club to listen to our other interviews and episodes. Tomorrow we have an interview with Pat Thornton, plus we just released our interviews with Shanti Marostica, Dave Merheji, Deborah DiGiovanni, as well as an episode discussing Saturday Night Live's album from 1976 with comedy legend Robin Duke, as well as Brandon Hackett of the Sketchersons, and Carrie Donaldson and Ali Entwistle of Brunch, live from the Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival, which is still growing on. So grab your tickets to some great shows while you can. In our next album episode, we discuss Beth Stelling's album, Simply the Beth, with Grace Smith and Ryan Hughes. Until then, I'm not Jason DeLine, but Matt Ardill. Thanks for listening to the Comedy Album Book Club.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.